Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. We're going to have on with us today two special guests. Anita Wills, a writer, author, speaker, and community activist. Ms. Wills is the author of 6 books, including A Nation of Flaws, Just Us in the Homeland, which is a historical account of policing in America. In addition, Anita is an activist for Black Lives Matter. She sits on the advisory and leadership board for SC Justice Group and a policy outreach leader for Ron Dellum Social Justice Institute. Anita's activism began when her son, Kerry Baxter Sr., was wrongfully convicted of second-degree murder in 2003, when her grandson was shot and killed in Oakland, California. Her activism took a new turn when she found out there were connections within the police department. Anita now advocates for many issues, advocates around the country on many issues, including wrongful convictions, unrealistic and very harsh sentences of African Americans, sentencing reform, prisoners' rights, and ending money bail, and holding the police accountable. We also want to welcome another special guest, Carl Allen, who is the founder and director of Stand Up and Do Something, which has offices in California and Syracuse, New York. Carl has been very influential in the fine advocacy network that he has established, which he will be discussing as well. So let's start welcoming on with us right now, Carl Allen from Syracuse, New York. Carl, are you on with us?
Yes, I'm on.
I want to thank you for coming on, and we're honored to have you on. Now, can you talk a little bit about your organization, Stand Up and Do Something, and also about yourself?
Myself, I was born in South Carolina. My mother brought me up to Reading, Pennsylvania at about 2-3 months old. So I was raised in the North, went into the military, came out of the military, attended UCLA, got a bachelor's degree in biochemistry, got a master's degree in analytical chemistry, and then ended up doing 3 years of medical school before deciding to leave. So really, for almost 20 years, I was basically a research scientist. And earlier this year, when we started having the riots over the Floyd murder, and I just didn't like a lot of what I was seeing. I didn't like the division I saw. I didn't like the groups that were involved on either side. And I just felt that there hasn't been enough done to neutralize and counter racism. And I really didn't see any organization out there that was really fit or equipped to do what was necessary. So I myself decided to start a nonprofit to deal with this problem in a number of different ways.
One of the things is you're right about, not enough has been done. You mentioned that you were in the military, and this is one of the things I want to bring out to the media, I mean, to the public. I say this all the time, this racial issue in America, I want everyone to realize that our military, in all these years, has consisted of men of all colors, from black, brown, red, beige, and white. And people have realized, had it not been for all of our troops of all races, they may not be here today to be listening to this radio show. I just want to get that out. And also, I want to bring up the George Floyd case, because one of the things that to this day, it bothers me. It could have been any one of your children out in the audience. It could have been any one of your loved ones to stand there in broad daylight and watch somebody keep their knee on a neck for all of that time until that person was dead. And no one, not anyone, could do anything about it because somebody in uniform, which is supposed to be a role model, this was just a disaster. And I needed to bring that out because it bothers me. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't bother anyone out in the audience that's listening to this, there is definitely something wrong. And I want to thank you for the services that you did for this country. And if it was South Carolina, you probably were at Parris Island, if not Parris Island, similar. But again, I want to thank you.
MCRD San Diego. I was a Marine.
Parris Island, South Carolina. I had three brothers in the Marines in my family, so I know what it's like. But again, I want to point out that this is something that the audience has to know. I don't care what color you are out there, you have to know that the United States, and that's why it's called the United States, not America, the United States, because it's representative of every country in the world. And every country in the world that fought for this country, for all of you out in the audience, remember that. It didn't just exist with one race. So I want to also bring Anita Wills on. And Anita, do you want to tell a little bit about yourself? I pretty much covered a lot of it from what I have here, but do you want to introduce yourself to the audience? I want to thank you also for being on with us.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Good. Okay. Yes. I'm an activist. I live in the Bay Area. I was born in Pennsylvania, in Coatesville. Lived in Reading, Pennsylvania. And my mother was like the first person who was my teacher, although I didn't know about it at the time. She told me about all of our ancestors while she had me as her oldest daughter, teaching me how to cook and sew and clean and do what, you know, I mean, that was back in the 50s. So I was at my mother's table and she was telling me that they took this land from us, from our native ancestors. I mean, when I was a young kid, I knew that she said, my people are, our native ancestors are from Pennsylvania. This is where we're from. And she would, you know, talk about how they set up a steel mill in the middle of the, you know, cut down trees and put up a steel mill and polluted the land. And I said, well, what happened to the natives? She said they ran them off, they killed them off, or they changed our racial designation. And and she told me about slavery, about our ancestors who were slaves. And I just knew a lot growing up that this was a unfair history, you know? And we lived in the shadow because there was a steel mill there. We were always having to go under our desk because the Russians were going to attack us. So we were always afraid of the Russians. At the same time, we were living in a place where we were being discriminated against, where we could not go certain places, where we would be called out of, you know, called the N-word, the jobs. And you know, so that's my growing up years. But at a point, I started writing about my family history and did not think of it as a political act, but because it involved George Washington and slavery and, you know, James Monroe's family and our connections to all these people who are on dollar bills or on the bills, it was seen as a political act by some people. That's what, and I was told to cease and desist in what I was writing about, you know, and those stories are in my books that are available on Amazon.com. But when I was writing and researching them, and went to those places, it was uncomfortable, and I realized that they don't want us to know about our own history. So my ancestors were in the Revolutionary War. My ancestors were in the War of 1812. My ancestors were in the Civil War. My dad was in World War II. My brothers were in the Vietnam War. You know, And this is like, who are we fighting for? We're sending our young people out to defend this country and come home and are told to go back to Africa, you know, or go back to your village or, you know, tell natives they don't belong here in their own homeland, you know. But my activism now has to do with my son. It started with my son being wrongfully incarcerated and having to fight that battle to bring him home and still fighting that battle to have his, you know, conviction overturned, to bring him home. And in the middle of that, my 19-year-old grandson was murdered. And then I found out that the same police officers that lied to have my son incarcerated were the homicide investigators over my grandson's murder. And they were the ones that had been harassing my family. Not only them, they were harassing me, you know. So this is the, you know, Oakland Police Department. And I've been very vocal about that. And they literally told me that I needed to tone down my rhetoric talking against them. And this was long before defund the police. Okay. So this is why I am an activist. But during the time, even though I came into being an activist on behalf of my son and my grandson, when Mike Brown Jr. was killed, I went to Ferguson, and I was there when they started. They didn't treat them like they treated the people in Washington at the Capitol. They treated us with mustard gas, AK-47s. They were chasing the young people that were there with helicopters, even though we were a peaceful demonstration. We were peacefully demonstrating, shot people with rubber bullets. That was how we were treated. And every place that I went and marched in this country, that's the way we were treated, even here in California, you know?
Now,
and that was before George Floyd.
You say you Pennsylvania, so you have the Indian in you, too.
Yes, the Native American from Virginia and Pennsylvania.
Okay, I want to let you know on Friday, Fridays and Saturdays at 5 p.m. Central Time, it would be 7 p.m. Eastern, Chinupa Gluhamani is, and he's on with us now, I believe. Chinupa, are you with us?
Yeah.
Chinupa? Let me just see if he put, hold on a second. They've been talking about the same issues. Chinupa Gluhamani? No, we have someone on the line. You want to state your name? You want to state your name, please? I guess not. One of the things is Chinupa Gluhamani and some of us have been coming. They had the show on Friday and Saturday, and they've been talking about the same things, the same thing you're talking about.
Yes.
The racism, the incarcerations of the and they themselves have talked about the blacks, the browns, the red, and the beige. These are issues that are major in this country. The way I look at it is people that are having problems with other races should not be in the United States. They should be in their country of whatever. Whatever origin they're from, and stay in their country. If their country is of all one race, that's where they need to be.
Right.
Not in the United States. And I'm sorry to hear about your loved ones, the wrongfully convicted, the killings and everything. This is animalistic, barbaric. The things that go on in this country. So I'm going to let you finish up what you were saying, and then have Carl come in and say what he wants to say as well.
Yeah, but what I wanted to say was I met Carl online, you know, and sometimes we were debating, and I thought, wow, this young man is really smart. I mean, he, you know, we went back and forth, and he was saying things that I didn't know. And so we were, you know, we were talking about doing, setting up a nonprofit and you know, things. And he was basically mentoring me on you know, how to talk about my ancestors. And my dad's people also come from South Carolina, so we were talking about that. And one of my mother's great grandmothers, she came from South Carolina, so we connected on that and the fact that he was from Reading, and I'm from Reading. I lived in Reading during my teen years, so we have a common interest. And this is why. And I was just as frustrated as Carl when nothing is going, nothing is changing, and the continuing murders of our people, and no accountability. It happens here a lot in the Bay Area, and I figured like this, that we're having issues at a local, a national, and it is a worldwide issue, and we needed something to address these issues, and this is why I joined with him, with Carl, and with the formation of Stand Up and Do Something, because it sounded like it is answering what we as a people need at this moment in time. So that's why what I'm about right now.
We'll bring this up at the end of the show as well, but I'd like to have you and Carl give your contact information, your websites, or anything, the names of your books, how they can get it, if you can give the audience that information. And then you can do it again at the end of the show. But for now, if you can both just do that.
Okay, Carl can do it first.
Well, our website is www.standupanddosomething.org. And it's all one word, but you use the letter N. www.standupanddosomething.org. It's a little bit different because we allow you that if you see a racial, economic injustice, you can actually enter it in on the website, and it comes directly to us. And we will keep a file, and we will investigate it. Our organization, as stated, is going to be a little different than most of these organizations, because in order to fight this problem that has been going on really for 400 years, you're going to have to burn this candle on both ends and the middle. And so in order to accomplish this, you have to work at the community level, at the political level, and at the international level. And that is what we're going to do to force this country to abandon and neutralize its racist history. And that's our goal.
Mm-hmm. Let's hope it works, because people forget that when it comes to the United States, when it comes to fighting for the country, when it comes to helping one another, it's not just about one race, it's about many. But we do still have a lot of people in this country. We see it now with this Capitol, with all of the things that had been going on in Washington, D.C., and what's going to be going on in the next week. We see it all here. It all stems from way back when people, their ancestors, were so bent on hating other races that it's instilled in so many people to this day. And this is why they cannot overcome the fact that the United States consists of people of all races. And if they stop focusing so much on the races and focusing on the human beings, we could probably have a normal country, rather than having all these other countries looking and laughing at the United States of America. I was watching PBS or one of those stations the other day when someone from another country was saying the United States has a nerve to tell us about our countries when they can't even get their own acts together. So we need to look at these things and hope and pray that this show today will awaken many and open eyes that need to be opened.
One of the key points I think is important to bring up, the reason why this organization is called Stand Up and Do Something, every year here in Syracuse, they have a Martin Luther King celebration. We're to dinner, and there's a speaker. And I attend every year. And a few years ago, there was a speaker there, and he mentioned something that was just so shocking to me, that throughout the civil rights movement, less than 13% of African Americans participated in the civil rights movement at all. I mean, sit in, bake sale, march, less than 13% of our people participated in the civil rights movement. That's apathetic. And the message we're trying to get out is, when you see a racial injustice, when you see, really, when you see any type of injustice, when you see any type of inequality, you need to stand up and do something.
Exactly.
Yes. Yes.
Exactly.
And it's, and here in California, well, in my county, we have a district attorney who has never prosecuted one policeman or law enforcement, officer, for killing a black person. Now, she was forced to do Oscar Grant, but she's getting ready to leave office. The people who are supporting her what Carl said, a lot of black people. She's a Democrat. This is a Democrat who is a district attorney here, and are being supported by our so-called black leaders, but not forced to stop the police from killing our people, and not forcing her to use her power, you know, to prosecute any of these officers. Not a one has been prosecuted. Not a one. And we allow it as black people. We allow that.
We are wondering if the caller wants to say anything before we go on to another subject here.
Well, she's talked about policing. And this isn't something that me and her have sat down to discuss, because we've been so busy, getting various things with this organization put together. But there are just some figures I'd like to put out there. 1966, there was 196 million Americans in 1966. 2020, we have 331 million. So our population between 1966 and 2020 has increased by 60%. 60%. Why has our police force, when our population has grown by 60%, why has our police force grown by 400%? In 1966, there were 371,000 police officers that was sworn and non-sworn police officers, law enforcement officers, national, state, and local level. Today, we have 1.3 million police officers. 800,000 of them are sworn officers, meaning they carry a badge, they carry a firearm, and they have the ability to arrest you. And I'm not advocating total defunding of police departments, but there is no reason for our population to increase by 60% while our police force has increased by over 400%. That's astronomical.
Mm-hmm.
And most of that police force is sitting here on our streets and freeways writing people traffic tickets.
That's right.
An absolute waste of resources.
Mm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Mm. They said that here in the Bay Area, in Oakland, the Oakland Police Department, which is under federal monitoring, they have 5 homicide detectives, and they have 100-something detectives on the streets writing traffic tickets, and also for burglaries. They have more policemen doing burglaries and writing traffic tickets than they do as homicide investigators. This is here in Oakland.
And so my whole point is this. We need to have less police officers out in the street harassing people. We need more detectives. We need more investigators. And then for the serious crimes, if you're a large police department, you have 3 fully trained SWAT teams for any type of situation that's live intervention where you have a live shooter. You just send in the SWAT. But to have police officers walking around and their primary job is to harass people and pull them over to give them a parking ticket or a misdemeanor violation is actually, how can I say it, a redesignation of the plantation. So basically, the police officers are the modern day plantation owners, because what they're out there doing, they're out here to protect and serve the interests of white people and not to protect and serve the interests of everyone.
Right.
You know, it's really sad when these things happen. It's really sad because, again, there's so many people who, if it were their own, they wouldn't know how to handle it. And this is what they do to the loved ones of others. I just can't fathom anyone having that kind of cold heart to do something. I remember being in Ghana, West Africa, one time, and there was something happened. There was a breakout, and I could hear all this confusion, and everybody's looking. And I said, "What's going on?" And they said that somebody tried to steal something, and the citizens themselves, the people, took over. They were all beating them up. This is the way it should be. I mean, it shouldn't be. If they cannot be non-biased, non-judgmental in the work that they do, if they can't represent all races, they shouldn't be doing the work that they do. Unfortunately, every time someone is killed, something is happening. They say the police need more training. The police don't need more training. They need to discern which police officers are biased, which are prejudiced, which are hating other races, and they need to get rid of them. Training is, I hear training so much, it makes me sick, because anybody can be trained, but not everybody has that kind of hatred in them. And when they see those that do have that kind of hatred, they need to get rid of them right away. They're like a virus. They're like an epidemic, and they need to get rid of them, because all they can do is pollute the rest of them. It's like a bad apple in a bush. If you don't get rid of that bad apple, the whole bushel of apples is going to get polluted and destroyed.
Yes. And they didn't want to hire people from, like in Oakland, before they did the gentrification here. There was a push to hire more people from the Oakland community, and they voted against that. They didn't want that. So they bring in the white officers from the suburbs to come into Oakland and be police officers.
Mm. Mm-mm-mm. I don't know. I just think that we're living in a time. And again, they, you know, I just want to quote something that was in the Bible about a rich man. And many people probably are familiar with this. There was a rich man who used to dress in purple and linen, enjoying himself day after day with magnificence. But a beggar named Lazarus used to be put at his gate, covered with ulcers and desiring to be filled with the things the things from the rich man's table that he was throwing out. Even the dogs were fed and licking his ulcer. Now it said, now in the course of time, the beggar died and was carried off by the angels to heaven. And the rich man died and was carried off into hell. And he's begging God to send Lazarus down to wet his tongue. And Lazarus didn't have to do that because he now is in heaven. So he's saying, well, at least send him to my people to let my people know that this really does exist. This is really real what they're saying. And if they don't change, they're going to be in hell. And so they said, if you didn't listen to the prophets of old telling you that this is going to happen someday, then it's too late now. And these people that are so greedy, that are so prejudiced, that are so hateful, they don't think there's going to be a day when they're going to have to face their maker. And they're going to have to suffer the consequences. And I want everybody to know that even though they have seen nothing, no changes since the flood thousands and thousands of years ago, they don't think that there's going to be a day when they're going to have to face the Most High. They're going to have to face a higher power. And they're not going to be able to justify why they have treated so many people so bad, why they have killed so many innocent people, why they have thrown so many people in prison for wrongful convictions. They're not going to understand why they're going to be paid back for all the injustice that they did to others.
Well, I feel like this. I just wanted to say that I believe that people that are full of hate and acting so animalistic are already in hell. They can live in areas that we can't live in. They have access to health care we don't have access to, and they're still full of hate. And I believe those people are in hell, that they're in it right now, because you don't even enjoy the benefits that you have. Instead, you want to come and take away what we have. You want to take away our freedoms. You want to judge us from your vantage point. I don't believe that they have to wait to go to hell. I believe they're in hell. And if they could get us to hate them, like a lot of people will say online when I'm online, oh, you must hate us. Some of these white folks, I don't hate you. It's not even in me to hate you. The thing that I do is I will tell you my truth. And if you don't like it, if it's a sword that's burning you because you can't stand the truth, oh, well. But I'm not going to spend my nights hating you and my days hating anybody. But I'm not going to bow down to you.
No, it's sad that these things have to happen at all. You know, one of the things I feel really bad about, too, I sent some things over to Africa, and it costs a lot of money to send, even if it's a small little package. But one of the things I find, there's no reason why any country in the whole wide world should be starving, should be hating, should be doing anything. If we can be feeding those who are starving in other countries, we can be feeding them. We could be clothing them. All we need is the governments to come together and say, we're not going to charge anyone to send things over to a third world country that is starving without. Because there's so many things that we've been blessed with in this country that we could be sharing as well with other people in other countries. But we can't afford to be sending these things over because we have a government that's so greedy that they want as much as they can. If they're not only charging you to ship it over, they're charging taxes, they're charging at both ends. So when you send something over to another country, they have to also pay at the other end. So the governments of this world, can be doing a lot more to stop this racial injustice. they can be doing a lot more to improve things. Again, we have law enforcement, we have prison officials, we have prison guards, we have all these people in uniform that are committing fatal crimes as well, unnecessarily. But because they wear uniforms, because they have titles, we have an ignorant populace in the world. We have an ignorant society that looks at only the titles and the uniforms. They don't look at the individuals behind those uniforms that are doing the same criminal acts as the people that are incarcerated. And that's where we're facing so much difficulty in, yeah. in the system of things, looking at uniforms and titles rather than looking at the individuals.
Mm-hmm.
Again,
yeah,
that's
one of the things.
Daryl Rainey from mm-hmm. Florida, a mentally ill prisoner who should have been in a mental institution, but they closed down all the mental institutions and decided to use the prisons as not only rehabilitation, which they don't get, but to use them as a mental institution. Daryl Rainey from Florida, a mentally ill prisoner, put in a shower by four guards. The shower turned on to 180 degrees, and this man was
yep.
scalded, burned alive while he was begging for his life. The prisoners on the block could hear him begging for his life while these four guards were laughing. This man burned so badly that his skin, his muscle, everything torn from his bones. And this is the kind of society that we call America, the United States of America,
mm-hmm.
people that can actually allow these things to happen. This is sick. And I'll tell you,
mm-hmm.
being raised in this country, I am so ashamed of it. And there's only one reason why I'm still in this country, because I, too, am going through the injustice of having a loved one that's I don't even want to get into that, but I will say one thing. What comes around goes around, and there is a God, and these things are going to turn around to these people that think it can never happen to them.
Yeah. Well, we're having, here in California, we have fires. Up in those suburbs and those enclaves that are white, where they're being burned out of their homes, where we have the epidemic, you know, the coronavirus, and they're still finding time to hate. In the midst of all that, they're still finding time to hate.
That's it. It's ridiculous. It's instilled in them so bad. I wonder
yeah.
back in the
well,
day.
One thing I want to say is it's instilled in them so bad, but the very funny thing is they can't see it. If you
yeah.
talk to white folks, what you will find in general, especially with those who are racist, they will have one or two claims. There's no such word as racism. Racism doesn't exist. There's no more racism today. But the problem is there is, and they can't see it in themselves. And the reason why it is because what most people don't realize is the bulk, almost 90% of the racists are what's called passive racists. There's a difference between an active racist and a passive racist. An active racist will call you the N-word and let you know that he's a racist and let him know he doesn't like you. A passive racist will play the dog and pony show. They will play the role of being racist, but see, if you see a family member, a colleague, a friend state a racial slur or do some type of social injustice based upon racism, and you don't say, and you don't say something about it, guess what? You're racist. You're racist.
Mm-hmm.
Turning a blind eye to the activity or acting like it doesn't exist makes you part of that action. You're complicit to it by your silence. And that's what many of them don't realize. Well, I never called anyone the N-word. Well, when your father called someone the N-word, did you, when your mother did, when a relative did, when your friend did, or when your work colleague did, did you say, hey, what are you doing? Why are you, that's wrong. That's, did you say something? So we are dealing with a society that has chosen to erase and not recognize their own racism. Because one, if they recognize their racism, then they have to admit to their own wrongdoing. And then by admitting to their own wrongdoing, you have to pay for your wrongdoing, which leads to the word reparations. And that's not something they want to get to. That's not something they want to do. So,
that's right.
So to keep from getting from A to Z, they just bury the whole situation and act like it doesn't exist.
Yes.
I want to say, Anita, you mentioned you Pennsylvania. I want to say something about Pennsylvania because as an advocate, I was out in Pennsylvania in 2007 and 2008 when there was some death, unnecessary death in the prison. So I'm familiar with Green. I'm familiar with Rutherford. I'm familiar with Penn State. I'm familiar with Philadelphia. I'm familiar with Frankenville. I'm familiar with Somerset. I'm familiar with Huntington, SCI Huntington, SCI Smithfield. There were deaths there. The racism in Pennsylvania is outrageous. But one of the things I want to just change, I want to change something for a minute. I'm going to be a little controversial on this. One of the things, we come from a continent where it all began. And before the flood, there was one continent. After the flood, there were two, the Middle East and Africa. There was a lot of dignity, one of the things is in America, we have our African Americans. We have our people from Africa now in the United States. They have become Americanized. And we talk about being called the N-word. But I have heard brothers and sisters using the N-word themselves, which I really totally get upset with. Just like on Facebook, on when they put up their stories, I see this girl, a nice-looking African-American girl, showing her buttocks, showing everything. And one of the things that I look at is we want to be respected by the white man. Why should we degrade ourselves? Why should we be? And blacks, another issue is blacks against blacks, light skin against dark skin. This is ridiculous because black is black. And whether you're beige or red or whatever, you're still considered a black person or a white man. But show your dignity, show your respect, show your strength, your warmth. The blacker, the way I look at it, the blacker the individual, the more powerful, the more beautiful they are. And sometimes we don't respect ourselves and we want to be respected. I have to put that out there because there's a lot of blacks. There's a friend of mine, his name is Gerald. He's from Pennsylvania. Bridges for Change, as a matter of fact. Bridges for Change, he's awesome. But I had talked to him one time about getting help for a prisoner. And he talked to somebody that he knew from Pennsylvania that could have helped. And the first thing that person said was all of them. He started stereotyping. This is a black person. Started stereotyping all the blacks in the prison. To me, that was ignorant because you have a black man stereotyping all black prisoners because he somehow has a little status up there. He's not as bad as at the bottom. He probably was at one time. And that's what happens sometimes with our people. They become too big
for
the bridges, as they say.
Well, have you ever heard of a nudist colony? Where whites go and are buck naked, and see everything they want to do, they make a law for it. And I don't pay as much attention to the outside of our young people as I do to because I understand that they are misinformed. So I don't really, like, necessarily judge them, but I know that when white folks want to do something, they make a law for it. When black folks want to do something, they make a law against it. And I heard black people wanting to make a law against saggy pants. Why would you want to give the police another reason to be approaching us? As you know, we know they're racist. We know they're killing us. So why would you make a law against saggy pants instead of trying to show our young people that, you know, how to respect themselves? Because obviously somebody is not showing them. And the other thing is, I don't care about whether white people ever like me or respect me or whatever. I'm not trying to get their approval. What we want is freedom. We want our rights, and we want them, you know, we want them the same way these folks here have their rights. That's what we want. And I don't think white people, in my mind, they're no better or no more entitled to anything than me and mine are. You know, that's the way I see the world. I'm not trying to get their approval or their, you know.
You shouldn't have to. No one should have to be. And I think that's what's happening in this country. We have a lot of insecure people that are whites, especially a lot of insecure whites in politics. And they're so worried about losing faith with their peers that they go along with their peers. They're so busy trying to keep up with the Joneses that they go along with them, even though they know they're wrong. And that's what's
that's the term, keeping up with the Joneses. Yep.
It keeps them weak. Yep. It keeps them looking weak in the eyes of others. But yet they feel like they're not weak because they're in with a minority elite. And that's sad because they're not happy. They're not happy. They can't be. I don't see how anybody can be happy when they're bowing down to others to stay in good faith with others rather than be themselves and do the right things.
And they're insecure because the people who actually do the hard work, which at this point is, you know, the immigrants, the ones that work the field, the people that actually do the hard work, the frontline workers, we black and brown people, we don't get any benefit. They benefit from our labor just like they did with slavery. So they feel insecure. And that insecurity turns into fear and hatred of the other.
You know, you mentioned not blaming the young people, and I don't blame the young people because we don't have the role models that we used to have. And these young kids are growing up with no role models. They're growing up. Even the adults, you see these adult rap singers. I don't have a rap is not my thing. And when I see the rap singers, a lot of them older ones that are, they're wearing the baggy pants. They're doing a lot of things that you would expect or you would see the younger people doing. That's not being a role model. You know, being a role model is singing, but dressing appropriately so that your young ones will dress appropriately. And
I bet they're dressing appropriately when they're around their white funders. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Yeah. They know, they really, you know, piss me off when I see that. It's unconscionable. The same way, you know, like Bill Cosby, he talked about them. You know, these kids are in the corner.
I had a problem with Bill Cosby one time watching him with his sunglasses on at nighttime being interviewed and talking to these young people, talking about these young people, you know, being you need to be in prison and what happened? See how things turn around?
Yeah.
And that's why I say it's sad, because these young kids today, even when they talk about gang members, why do they become gang members? Because they're all young kids. I remember meeting these three young black males. Hold on a second. I remember meeting these members, three young men from New York. They said every time they walked out of their house, the police would stop them and pick them up and for no reason at all start harassing them. So this is why a lot of these young kids today, they don't know which way to turn.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
That's what happened to my grandson who was murdered. Whenever he left his house, the police were harassing him. pulling him over. And he was so paranoid and upset. And, you know, I didn't know this was going on because I lived in another city. And when I talked to him, the last time I saw him before he was murdered, he told me they had taken his ID. He wanted to go to work. He was afraid to leave the house because they pulled him over. They harassed him and told him, oh, you know, we know who your father is and we're going to get you like we got your father. And it went on, you know, and I told him I would help him, but I wanted him to, you know, come and live with me. But by the time he was ready to do that, he was dead. You know, he got killed. And they get harassed. They harass my other grandson who lives with me when he goes into Oakland. And they pull him over and, you know, just to mess with him, just to make contact. And don't charge him with nothing. There's no reason to charge him. They're just harassing him. And it's because we're vocal. I'm vocal. I'm an activist. And so they do come. They're like a gang. They come after your family. And they try to intimidate you. And I refuse to be intimidated. You know, I have to tell, I tell my grandson what his rights are and what to do when you're being harassed. You know, how to act. Unfortunately, we have to tell them how to act so that they can come out of it alive. And it's really sad. It's really sad.
It's a shame when you have to warn your children. That mayor in New York, I can't remember his name. Carl, you may know him, Blasey or whatever.
Blasey?
No, his son is, I don't know if it's adopted or if it's his biological son, but apparently he has a son of color, and he was talking
His wife is actually black.
Okay, so he was talking about how he has to warn his son. Every time his son is ready to go out anywhere, he has to warn his son because he worries about what's going to happen with his son, with the police.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of his sons was harassed.
This is a white man with a son who and a black wife. This is a biracial family, and he has to warn his own son, and he's a mayor. He has to warn his own son against the law enforcement. That is sad.
Mm-hmm.
That is really a shame.
Well, mm-hmm. The one problem here we have is that we're hoping that the law enforcement will, or that the police will change the police. The police are not going to change the police. We have to put pressure in the political system for them to change the police. And this is one of the things that we are going to be working with states, Congress,
yes,
the president, in order to get change. Mm-hmm. Because, as I stated, we're not just going to have community organizers. We want to get lobbyists in Washington, D.C. One of the things that I find crazy, if you want to be a barber, if you want to work in a hair salon, you have to go to school for 2 years in most states to get licensed. How come a police academy is only 30 days? I mean, not 30 days, 3 months or 4 months.
Right.
90 days or 120 days at most, and you get to carry a gun and decide mm-hmm. who lives and dies.
That's right.
I think if you get to, you if you're going to carry a gun, you should have to go through as much time training as someone who's welding a curling iron or some hair sheets.
Mm-hmm.
So, second, there needs to be a national registry. So once a police officer is fired, he can't get another job somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
There needs to be intense psychological testing. to weed out all the racists, to weed out those who are mentally unstable. And it's obvious there isn't intense psychological testing. We just had a police officer in, I think it was in Tennessee, while he was on duty, pull, and this was a black police officer, pulled a black man into his police car, murdered him in the police car, got rid of the gun, and did this all in uniform. Shot the man through rolled down the window in his police car and shot the man in his back seat. So we need intense psychological testing to weed out all the criminal police officers also, because we do have some criminals in the police force.
Not some, but many.
I find it absolutely crazy that after 90 days, 120 days at the most, you get to choose who lives and dies versus if I want to do hair of any type, I got to go through 2 years worth of training. It's crazy to me.
Yeah, it's, you know, and they talk about gun control and all of this, and I think that's why they're so intent on keeping guns out there, is because they want to use them in a negative way, and it shouldn't be. As you say, they need to go under extensive training. They need to go through a lot. And another thing I understand is a lot of times, even prison guards, when they get fired for something that they have done wrong, they don't really get rid of them. They transfer them to another prison or another place where they may be working in the office or whatever. Like you say, they shouldn't be allowed to work anywhere else when they do these things, but they do. And as far as guns, that's another thing, guns being planted on people. You know, it happens. That man that was shot in the back not too long ago, which the police officer that shot him in the back got away with it. They said he was getting in his car and he was reaching for something under the seat. Well, if they saw him getting ready to reach for something in the car, they could have shot him in the leg. They could have pulled him backwards. They could have done anything. But it seems like shooting somebody in the back is justifiable in any situation that they're in. It isn't. There's no reason why anyone should be shot in the back, because it's not showing that they're facing to do any damage. They're running away. They're running away from it. And too many people are being shot because guns are allowed, with police officers that don't receive enough training, or they don't receive enough background checks. And I think that's what happens a lot of times too. Background checks. They said the person that killed George Floyd had a history. That's what I heard. He had a history of issues. So what was that man even doing in uniform?
Yeah. And the other thing is this, that they live by this creed that a black man has no rights that a white man is bound to respect. So they don't even, this is back from slavery. This is way, way back. Anytime that they can just come out and kill you with impunity, they are saying to you, your life is worth nothing. You are worth nothing to this society. Nothing. My son was working. He was a taxpayer. He was taking care of his family. And they came and disrupted the family and arrested him, knowing he was not guilty of what they charged him with or what they found him. They knew it, and they set out to destroy his family. Mm-hmm. And they do that over and over again with us, whether we're in South Carolina in the rural areas, whether in the urban areas. They hunt us down just like they did during slavery.
Yeah.
Well, the one big thing we have to understand is and I'm 56 years old. I'm 56 years. Well, I'll be 57 in about 2 weeks. But currently, I'm 56 years old, and what I mean, throughout my entire life, the worst racism I've seen publicly has been over the last 6 to 8 years. We have all of this black face and this outright racism and all of these people, for a long time, they were keeping this stuff under wraps.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people do not understand why we are having this backlash of racism. Now, don't get me wrong. I understand racism has always been here. But the reason why African Americans, blacks, whatever you want to call us, are going through this intense period of racism right now is because of Obama. When he won that second, second term, it drove this white population insane.
Yep.
Drove them insane. They could barely deal with a black man in the White House for 4 years. Now we got to deal with him in the White House for another 4 years. That was too much for them. It was too much for them.
I think they need to change the name of the White House too.
Obama said the house that we built, our ancestors built that, literally.
Wow.
But see, I'm going to say something that's going to be controversial, but I'm going to say it anyways. We lost more than we gained with this Obama presidency. And the reason why I'm saying this is he was inspirational. He was inspirational, but he didn't complete the second part of the program. And that was franchise us. That was to franchise us. Franchise us. He did the inspiration part. So he didn't franchise us. He didn't make one executive order, didn't promote one bill, didn't create one piece of legislation that was specifically for or would elevate African Americans. He didn't do one, not one. He did not franchise us. And now, in light of that, we have to deal with all of this racial backlash. So we have to step up, and we have to change that.
And they upset because Kamala Harris could, if something happens, she's going to be the second in line to be president. That's why they ready to tear things down right now.
You know, the whole thing is so crazy because, as Kyle was saying, when President Obama was in office, he could have done a lot to get things started, you know, with the people of color. But I remember when he first got in, he took a trip to Ireland, I guess, because I guess there was some Irish in him. And I remember him taking a trip to Ireland. But the thing is, at that time, it would have been a good time to try to bring Ireland and Africa together, you know, and the people, because we have darks in everything. We have the dark Arabs, we have the white Arabs, we have the what they call the black Irish, and we have the white Irish. We have the black Italians and we have the white Italians, you know, Sicily and all this. So every continent, every country, they have their darks and their lights. And we have the same thing with blacks. So when I hear of this racial prejudice, I can't understand it, because it's okay for, I have seen Italians that actually look like they're light skinned blacks. You know, I have seen that, of course, the Arabs too. And there's a lot of races in European countries where they have darks and lights. So it's the pigmentation of their skin. So what does it mean when they see a black person? It's the pigmentation of their skin. When they go all the way back to the beginning of creation, it was in an area where it was the Jesus was not white. There's no way that Jesus himself could have been white, because he came from a continent that was of color. And so when they talk about the people of color, they have to look, these European countries, they have to look at some of their own people who don't even look white, because their pigmentation is not of white pigmentation. So this racism around the world is ridiculous.
Yeah, because I just did my African ancestry, and it come back that my female ancestor, you know, the straight female, is from York. Well, she's from Spain. My direct female ancestor was in Spain. I already knew that, but I thought, you know, I was trying to see if they would identify the African, because I know who my African ancestors are on my mother's side. But they said, no, your straight female ancestor is from Europe. So that's, you know, but the Moors were in Europe. The Africans are the ones who went into Europe, and they were the modern humans. They're the humans, the first humans in Europe were from Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And they went into Spain. They went into Spain, and they went into and Portugal, and all over Europe.
I'm going to blow you away. Do you know the story of St. Patrick? St. Patrick. St. Patrick was a Roman Pope. You know why we have St. Patrick's Day?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Guess who occupied Ireland?
The Moors.
No Africans. Dark skin race. There were two tribes. The small tribes were called, the tall ones were called the Druids.
Yes.
And the small pygmy black ones were called the leprechauns.
What?
After the Roman Catholic Church brought Britain, England in, Ireland was still occupied by these Africans, these two tribes of Africans. St. Patrick was the Pope who went in there and had all of those inhabitants murdered. The original people who lived on that island had them murdered so that the whites could go in and take over that land.
The Anglos and the Normans went in there. Because they dug up a skull of the first humanoid or the first human being in Britain, and it was a black person with black hair, a black person, not a dark skinned person, a black person. And that's the first person that was in Britain, which is now England, Wales, Ireland, and Scotland. Yes, these were dark-skinned people. These are, and they know that. And what they don't want is for us to know it, for us to talk about it, because they're not going to teach us.
when you look at the Jewish people, you have the Jewish in Israel, but you also have the Jewish in Ethiopia, and they're a color. I had a friend one time, Millie, she came running to me. She said, Leona, I was just watching this thing on TV. She said, did you know that all of our DNA comes from Africa? I said, Millie, yes. I said, that's where it all started. What happened is everything was created on the one continent. After the one continent, it became two after the flood. And then people started migrating. I mean, everybody was from those two. They started migrating all over the world. And that's when some areas under the equator and above the equator, that's when they started going to countries where their pigmentation started changing. So you have the Brazilians, yeah. They're the Portuguese and the Africans. You know, you have the Mayan Indians. A lot of them are part of India. These people started migrating all over the world, but they all came from Africa initially. That's why I say people, right. If they started to study cultures, if they started interacting with people of the cultures, you know, they would get to know more. It's almost like I say, even with as a social worker working for the Department of Social Services, people come out of college with no knowledge at all about other cultures. You know, they come out of college, right. Unmarried, no children, prominent homes. They don't know when they go into dysfunctional homes of different cultures, they don't know how to deal with the people. And so they start telling them what they want them to do instead of trying to understand how their cultures are. So kids get put in foster care and they get violated, they get abused, they get murdered sometimes because they're being placed in foster homes where they don't understand. This is what people need to do. To start doing their ancestry. They need to start seeing where they come from because everybody started out in Africa, migrated, and so you have whites that would have been black if they stayed in that continent. You know, you have blacks that could have been, you know, whites if they had migrated to like places like Greenland and places like Alaska and places like that. So it's about the pigmentation, not about the color itself.
Yeah. Yeah, the father of literature in Russia, Pushkin, is an African man. He was an African man. His people were the czars, the ones that ran, you know, that were the royalty, the ones that they came in and got rid of.
Mm-hmm.
Pushkin's people were they had money. They came from Portugal and Spain. Because Portugal and Spain had the royal families. They had kings and queens. And they took that system throughout Europe. So most of the Europeans that came here were poor. They had nothing. That's what the Statue of Liberty says. Bring us your tired, poor, your hungry, you know, your huddled masses. They ain't telling them to send their royalty here. Mm-hmm. They sent their poorest people here. And that's been going on since the colonies were founded. They have been bringing people here. They've been emptying their jails because they never thought of it as becoming what it has become. They were sending them here to punish them, you know. And they had to.
Hello? Anita?
Yep, I'm still here.
Oh, okay. Anita stopped talking. I was wondering what happened.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Carl, do you want to speak on that?
Well, once again, we're just dealing with a world who doesn't want to accept the contributions of a dark man. It's the same thing with medieval England. Them coming out of the Dark Ages, what do? Coming out of the Dark Ages, they bring all the Moors into England. When the Moors came into England during the end of the Middle Ages, the whites were living inside their homes with their animals, cows, pigs, everything, lived inside of the house with them. They taught them about not having your animals, your cows, pigs, dogs, all this stuff, living in the house, inside the house, taught them about cleanliness and bathing, started building all of their cathedrals and big castles. All this stuff was built by the Moors. Classical music, Mozart, Beethoven, all of this stuff. These people were black. Then you have, I can't remember which king it was. It was actually a queen. I can't remember what her name was. I believe it was actually Queen Elizabeth I. She created a law after they got everything they wanted. It was illegal for them to be there, and had all of them removed from the country. Are you there? Hello? Hello?
Yeah. Is okay. Anita still with us?
Yeah. I doubt it. Okay. She's here. So there's a long-standing history. It's a long-standing history of whites taking what African Americans make, taking credit for it, or taking it and making money off of what we do. We've never gotten the credit or have been economically compensated for what we've done, not just in here in America. I mean, we're talking all over the world. And the cycle's going to continue until we do something about it.
And I think starting your organization, I think that's the beginning. That's the beginning. Stand up and do something is something that needs to be done. And you know what? Networking with other organizations around the country that are trying to do something similar or the same thing is something good to do. And that's why connecting, and even on Facebook, there's so many groups on Facebook right now that are against the injustices going on in this country. And these are ways to connect, to get involved in these groups, to share what you're doing, and to recruit.
Yeah.
What happens is
they get one of us to talk back to us when we're trying to do, you know, when we're making changes, then they'll find someone, a Clarence Thomas type, to put out there to talk back to us. And they hide behind that stereotype, you know, that brother or sister that's talking to us.
And
we got to pull that sheet off.
That's the insecurity. If everyone is their own person, if everyone is their own person and not trying to please their peers, and they know what's right and wrong, there's nothing wrong with being different. If you know something is wrong, then say it. Say something is wrong and stand up. Be a man or a woman. Don't be worrying about what other people are going to be thinking about you, because as long as you know you have the respect for yourself, that's the main thing. Everyone is not going to agree with somebody. You know, I have people that respect me and I have people that don't, because a lot of people don't want to hear the truth. But I'm not anybody else's puppet. You know, I'm my own person. I'm an independent person, and I say what I feel is right and I say what I feel is wrong. And that's all we all have to be like. We don't have to please anybody.
Right.
But we have too many people in this country.
I try to live my life so that I can walk in any door, that there's no place I'm hiding from. I don't have to hide from anyone or, you know. And I, you know, like you said, I respect people who are, you know, who are due respect, but I don't necessarily disrespect people. I just don't, you know, I just don't bother with them or I ignore them. But I certainly don't, they will not be advising me, you know.
Yeah. You know, my heart goes out to people who have gone through tragedies, whether they're white, black, red, beige, brown. My heart goes out to them. If they have a loved one that they've lost, or a loved one that's been, you know, unjustly harmed, I don't pick and choose. And a lot of people in this country, they do. If somebody is black, they could care less if they get harmed. If they're white, it's a different story, or vice versa. But we have to realize we all bleed the same. You know, we all think the same. We all have loved ones that we, you know, we don't want to see harmed. So, again, if there's anybody out there in the world today that is going to feel no pity or no compassion for somebody that's less fortunate, or somebody that's being abused or unfairly incarcerated or unfairly killed, mm-hmm. you know, it's like everybody's pro-life. Okay, they're pro-life at one end and they're pro-death at the other. You know, if people yeah. are going to be pro-life, have your child, don't destroy it, don't have abortions. But then at the other end, if something happens with their child, they're up here wanting the death penalty. It's so inconsistent. It doesn't even make sense. So if you're going to be pro-life mm-hmm. in the beginning, then be pro-life in the end as well. But not life without parole, and not life in prison. And a lot of these people that are so judgmental, if you want pro-life, be there for the parent or the parents as their children are growing older. You know, if something goes wrong, don't judge. The media has a habit of doing that. The media will get on a case when something happens, and they will be one-sided. It's all that person that committed that offense. They don't look into why that person committed that offense. They don't look at what was going on in that person's mind, how that person may have been hurting, how that person may have been misled, how that person didn't have the support that they needed at the time they were going through it. The media needs to be defunded, just like the police, law enforcement, the Department of Corrections around the country, because they are receiving so much money. That's what it is. They're receiving so much money that even own peers are afraid to come forward to talk about the injustices mm-hmm. their peers are doing. You know, correctional guards, there's some really good ones. Police officers, there's some really good ones. But they're too afraid to speak up because of the union.
Yeah. Well, they, you know, like when Mike Brown Jr. was killed, we did research on that cop that killed him. The media never talked about the background of the cop, that his mother, they lived in trailer parks. He didn't know who his dad was. His mother was, you know, arrested and put in jail for drugs and stealing. Like this man, this white man who killed Mike Brown Jr. was no different than Mike Brown Jr., except he was a policeman with a gun. Yeah. He had issues that should have been resolved before he ever became a policeman. You know, and this, you know, but the media, when they look at him, they didn't talk about his background, but they were talking about Mike Brown Jr.'s background. Like he wasn't even a bad kid.
They do that with all these cases. If you ever notice, when somebody is killed by law enforcement unjustly, they don't focus on the person that did the shooting. They focus on the background of the person that was shot. And if there's anything negative to say about that person, they'll say it. But we have the media that's one-sided. For whatever reason, the media chooses to go with the one that's looked upon as in respect. They don't. And a lot of the media people today, a lot of these media individuals, they're young people. They're young, and if you notice, they focus more on their dress. They focus more on cats and dogs instead of real news.
Right. Yeah. But when I go to, like, when you go to the suburbs, like I used to live out further, and the news up there was always negative about the crime and stuff that was going on in Oakland, in the Bay Area. That's all they know. Because they read the papers, their news people tell them only certain things, and it's always negative stereotypes about the urban areas. So these people are actually afraid of the people in the urban areas because of the lies that they are being fed about the people here. Wherever we go as black people, they ran us out of the South, our ancestors. They came north looking for jobs and economic freedom. Then they want to run us out of here. And we're tired of running. We're not going to keep running out of our own, you know, out of our own country. You're not going to keep doing that.
Nor should you have to. You shouldn't have to. No white man ever created the continents. No man ever created anything. And there's no man that should be able to tell who should be on a certain continent, who should be in a certain country, who should be bound down to them. Who are they?
Right.
Just like all of us, they're creation. There's nothing special about them. And there's two masters that can be served. There's either the evil or the good. And if they have that kind of hatred in them, then we all know what their master's all about.
Yeah.
You know, it shouldn't be.
And why can I go? I can go to Europe. I've been to Greece and was treated totally different as a black person. I mean, I was just seen as a human being walking the street in Greece.
You know, that's what I wanted to say about other countries. I've met people directly from Ireland. And they are the best people I've ever met in, you know, in that race.
Yeah.
But the people that are Irish in this country, there's so many that are racist. I've met people from Italy. I've met people from other countries who are totally different than their own people in the United States. Can't understand it.
Yeah.
When they come here, they become really racist. When you talk to them in those countries, they don't even seem to look at the colors. That's the difference between
America conditions everyone. When you come to this country, you're conditioned. You're conditioned and you're taught, you're told, you don't want to deal with these type of people. You don't want to deal with these type of people. They're okay. This is an indoctrination. It's a training sort of thing. And that's why so many of them are crazy now, because they have this Parler app on this phone. This other one, I think it's called Gab, and these actual domestic terrorists have been passing around these conspiracy theories for the last 6-8 years on these apps, on these people's cell phones, and we as African Americans, we were totally oblivious to it. I didn't know anything about this Parler app or Gab until last week when, you
Never
know,
heard
the
of
internet
it. Yeah.
comes. Internet companies started shutting them down. But this is what these domestic terrorists have been using to spread all these conspiracy theories. And these people are programmed now. They believe the unbelievable.
It's a shame. It really is. I'm going to say we have about a minute and a half, so I'd like to have you two, again, give you your contact information, and then hopefully we can pick up on this in another 4 weeks. I'll be talking Anita, but I'd like to have you back again, and maybe in a month, so we can get an update on everything that's going on with you and Carl in your organizations, in your books.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You want to give your information?
www.standupanddosomething.org. The corporate telephone number is 315-634-6669. 315-634-6669. You can contact either myself or Anita via that number.
Yes.
Okay. And Anita, do you have anything you want to say real quickly about the books or anything?
I just want to say thank you and, you know, for this, that, and for, you know, introducing our organization. We look forward to continuing to work with you.
I'd love to have you both back. And again, I'm sorry to hear about your grandson being shot and killed by the Oakland police. And I'm also sorry to hear about your son, Kerry, and his situation. You know, it's one thing losing one, but it's another thing when you lose two, whether it be incarceration or whether it be death unnecessarily.
Yeah.
So I'm really sorry about it, Anita. And I look forward to having you and Carl back on with us again in a few weeks to give an update on everything that's been going on as well.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We are now going to be signing off, everyone. I hope you enjoyed the show, and please, please take this home with you and learn something from it, because we are all individuals, and we are all children of God, and we really need to become closer in love and compassion, understanding and mercy. Thank you so much.